The following program, Normal Show Live, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it,
and it goes down smooth.
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
Well, on the earth.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents...
We love the earth.
Normal Show Live! Marijuana Nation! Now, here's your host, Normal's Outreach Coordinator, Radical Russ Belville.
Good afternoon, Tokers and Tipcats. Welcome to the show. It is Monday, July 25th, 2011, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thanks for being here as we start another week of news, interviews, music, comedy, and more by, for, and about the cannabis community. But I am all alone here today in Rolla J Studios. Both Wiz Calico and Ganja John are on the road in Southern Oregon. You can see the studio's empty. They are down there following the Seedless Summer Tour with Slightly Stupid. We'll get a report from them later this week. They were there in Eugene on Sunday for the concert. They'll be down in Jacksonville, Oregon Tuesday for the concert. We're hoping to get some great backstage audio from them. So, in the meantime, let us introduce from our virtual studio in beautiful Grafstoria, Oregon, the lovely and talented Cannabis Carrie.
Yes, happy Monday. And yes, those lucky little bastards.
I know, they're so lucky. I guess I'm a lucky little bastard too, because I just got back from Montana, the Montana Marijuana Aid, a.k.a. CannaFest Destiny 2011. I love that name. We're going to bring you some video, pictures, and my recollections of the CannaFest Destiny celebration out there in Montana in our hour two, so check that out. We've got some new music from Greta Gaines and some other Montana musicians that I learned about while I was there. Fantastic stuff. So we'll get that to you in hour two. But for hour one, right here on the podcast, we start with our hemp headlines and Cannabis Carrie. What's in the news today?
Well, today we actually have a legal brief coming out of Montana that we're going to talk about. So some Montana news today. Also, another case that I think is really important that we're following here on the Stash out of Washington. Both of those cases have to do with caregiver laws. And then we're going to go up to Canada. First, Canadian crime statistics that were released last week, and a new study on driving and cannabis up in British Columbia. All that coming up on the Hemp Headlines.
Okay, so we got a jam-packed show for you today. Coming up for your Roots Monday, we are going to get some of that great reefer jazz from Cannabob, a video reefer jazz, a Smokey Joe combo with Hit That Jive Jack. And then, unfortunately, I got some bad news right before we went to air today. Our guest scheduled for today was Sean Pamphilon from ESPN. But the collective bargaining agreement for the NFL players has been signed today, unanimous from the players. So there is going to be an NFL season. It's huge breaking news in the world of sports, so Sean has to get on that. And so he has promised he'll be with us tomorrow to talk about his latest projects and more information about sports, the sports world, and drug use within the sports world. So we'll talk to Sean tomorrow. And then at the end of the show, a little time for some radical rant. More crazy shenanigans going on in the state of Colorado with people who consider themselves to be activists. We'll talk more about that in the Radical Rant, and we'll take your calls in hour two. It's Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation. Thanks for joining us. Stick around. You just might learn something.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
In today's busy world, we're inundated by advertising for all types of pharmaceuticals that come with a laundry list of potential side effects. Shouldn't you have better medical choices? Natural alternatives to pills pushed by Big Pharma? At Alternative Medical Choices, you could choose natural, safe, and effective alternative therapies that are right for your budget without nasty side effects. Cannabis, or marijuana, has been a legal medicine in the Pacific Northwest since 1998. Our doctors will help determine your qualifications for a medical marijuana recommendation in Oregon, no matter where you live. Our massage therapist will ease your aches and stress with soothing hemp seed oil or cannabis-infused massage salves. We also offer acupuncture, Reiki, and other alternative health therapies. Call Alternative Medical Choices in Portland, Oregon at 503-288-5579 or visit our website at www.altmedchoices.com. We specialize in out-of-state recommendations. That's www.altmedchoices.com or call 503-288-5579.
Hey, this is John Papa. You're listening to The Normal Show Live.
Did you know there are more Tokers than Texans? Hi, I'm Radical Russ Belville, host of Normal Show Live. It's true, there are more adults who will consume cannabis in America this year than the population of Texas. This and thousands of other statistics and polls are part of my new book, Normal's Big Book of Marijuana Facts, including 19 full-color poster-sized infographics of cannabis data.
A entirely legitimate topic for debate.
If we're going to have that debate, we need the facts. But Normal's Big Book of Marijuana Facts isn't just some listing of statistics and tables. It's truly a big book, a huge weatherproof binder that becomes its own 12 by 18 presentation easel. The colorful charts are jam-packed with facts that draw interest, and the explanatory text is all rigorously researched from reputable sources. You can make the case against prohibition with the government's own numbers. You can learn more about Normal's Big Book of Marijuana Facts by visiting stash.normal.org/bigbook. Pre-orders are available, and shipping begins September 1st, 2011. That's stash.normal.org/bigbook.
Look, when I was a kid, I inhaled frequently. That was the point.
Remember, Mr. President, you once were just one bust away from being Barry the drug criminal.
Life ain't a box of chocolates gum. That's why people smoke weed and take bumps and drink way too damn much and get drunk and do it all over again first of the month.
Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Normal News with Cannabis Carrie.
Well, Russ, you were just in Montana, and there is an important case that we are following there. The case involves caregiver-to-caregiver transactions involving marijuana used for medical therapy. It all began with a traffic stop last year and two men facing felony drug crimes. During the traffic stop, officers subsequently found several pounds of marijuana in their possession. One man was a registered caregiver, and the other was a medical marijuana card holder. They were driving it to deliver it to another caregiver. The court documents state that the men had 3 pounds of marijuana, 300 capsules of marijuana, and 5 small vials of oil extract. The men were charged with criminal possession with intent to distribute, a felony that is punishable by up to 20 years in prison and a fine of $50,000. They have pleaded not guilty. Now, meanwhile, on behalf of the men, the Montana's Medical Marijuana Growers Association filed a lawsuit to seek clarification on the rules of Montana's law. Lawyers representing the group said that the defendants in that case were within their constitutional rights, and the transaction was inside the scope of the Montana Medical Marijuana Act. They said that the widespread presumption that transactions like that are illegal is intruding on the rights of the caregivers and patients, and they are asking the court for a legal clarification. So far, it's been an uphill battle. In April, filed under a separate case involving one of the men in the car that day, a Missoula judge ruled against him, saying that the 2004 voter initiative law particularly prohibits a caregiver-to-caregiver transaction, since it prohibits a caregiver from providing marijuana to anyone other than a qualifying patient. That ruling is now being appealed to the state Supreme Court. And earlier this month, a second ruling in the Growers Association suit also ruled that the caregiver-to-caregiver transactions were not specifically addressed, and the plaintiff's legal arguments fell outside of the Montana Medical Act, the gray area. So that would have to be clarified by law, and not judicial order. And now this, a second state judge ruled in the same exact way. District Judge Stuart Standler ruled against the Medical Marijuana Growers Association last week that the law does not allow caregivers to transfer marijuana between themselves. This ruling, unfortunately, may have implications in the criminal case of the two men that are set to be heard later this year.
Well, once again, the crazy stuff that we have to go through, the contortions of the law that we have to suffer in order to try to separate the healthy people that we can lock up from the sick people that we can't. The idea here that a caregiver could have 3 pounds and give that to a patient, transact that with a patient, but that a caregiver couldn't transact that with another caregiver who needs to take care of a patient? That is, the direct supply to the patient must be only one caregiver? You know, these people need to get their medicine, and sometimes if one caregiver has a problem with a crop, you know, could be mites, could be, you know, just a crop failure of molds or anything, and he may need to take care of his patient. And the only way he can take care of his patient is to trade or get some cannabis from another caregiver in order to supply that patient. Are we to say here that the patients who have the dumb luck of ending up with a caregiver who ends up with a failed crop shouldn't have anywhere to turn? These regulations are ridiculous. We're seeing it in state after state after state that has medical marijuana, again, trying to separate out what is a legitimate transaction of somebody who's compassionately trying to take care of a sick person versus who is somebody who's opening up a business to sell to healthy people who want to get high. The easiest way, of course, to solve this is to legalize marijuana, make it a regulated crop, a regulated commodity like we treat alcohol, like we treat cigarettes, recognize that adults like to use it, and then the people who need to use it for medical purposes won't have so many troubles trying to get a hold of it. Oops, let's try that again. Tough here without Ganja John sometimes.
I bet. And some crime statistical news coming to us out of Canada. It seems that in years past, America's drug war looked outrageous as compared to Canada's seemingly more relaxed approach to cannabis crimes. It was illegal, but the arrests for the crimes were a tiny percentage compared to U.S. arrest rates. Well, new crime statistics released by the Canadian government this week show a marked increase in marijuana crime arrests last year. While all over crime rates across Canada fell to their lowest point in 40 years, arrests for marijuana possession jumped up 14% between 2009 and 2010. There were 56,870 arrests for marijuana possession in Canada in 2010. There were an additional 18,256 arrests for trafficking marijuana, an increase of 10% from 2009. The only other crime that went up instead of down, other than cannabis crimes, were assaults on police officers. Canadian activists say that the statistics show the Harper government has been targeting cannabis consumers, even though a large number of Canadians support full legalization. They say that the crackdown on simple marijuana possession is costly and a waste of resources on a cause that is ultimately futile.
Well, well, well. See, the marijuana arrests are up, and the arrests for violent crime and such are down. See? Arresting potheads reduces crime. No, that's not the way it goes here. Crime continues. It's just a matter of where we choose to place our resources. There are as many violent crimes going on in Canada as there always has been. We're just arresting fewer people for it. There are only a limited amount of resources in manpower and money to go after crime in any country. And if you choose to focus more of those on marijuana arrests, then you have less of those to focus on the crimes that really affect human beings here. It's just sad to see Canada continuing to go down this prohibitionist path that the United States of America has shown the example that it just does not work. So sad. I hope you get a change in government soon, Canada.
And I'm interested to hear what you have to say about this study method, Russ. A study in British Columbia is examining the link between marijuana use and car accidents. The method, though, testing the blood of injured drivers while they are in the hospital and without their consent, is raising some questions. Dr. Jeffrey Brubacher, who is leading the study, says it will include 3,000 drivers being treated at 5 separate emergency departments throughout British Columbia. He says the data will be completely anonymous and not shared with law enforcement, so the patient's approval is not required. They will only include drivers who already require blood work, so no unnecessary blood will be drawn from patients that would not have had blood drawn to begin with. Now, this is a follow-up to a 2010 government study that found that 9% of drivers on the road between midnight and 3 a.m. tested positive for one or more drugs. They say that 63% of those 9% tested positive for cannabis. But so far, there remains no conclusive research on the impact of cannabis in driving ability, according to Dr. Brubacher. He credits his plan to take the blood from emergency rooms and not wait till hours after is the basis for having a more conclusive study than those that came before him. He hopes his research can eventually lead to an established allowable THC blood content, similar to the blood alcohol content they test with roadside breathalyzers. Dr. Brubacher says that simulator studies have shown drivers heavily impaired by marijuana were more likely to crash into sudden obstacles, while, quote, moderate doses impair highly automated tasks but leave complex functions such as interpretation and anticipation of traffic patterns relatively intact. Discussing his research in the BC Medical Journal, Brubacher said that the evidence available suggests marijuana increases the risk of crashing, but this risk and how it varies with cannabis dose is not well quantified.
Well, on first examination of this, I'm always a supporter of more data. Get us more data. And when they're talking about blood tests, let's recall, because some people get confused about this, blood tests test for the active THC in blood. They're not testing metabolites like urine. So the excuse of, well, you know, it could show up for 3 weeks later, that doesn't apply when we're talking about blood tests. Blood tests are generally within hours or, in the case of very, very frequent users, days. But there are some problems here. First of all, we haven't shown that the accumulation of a certain nanograms per milliliter in the blood is indicative of any sort of actual impairment, especially in those who are frequent and regular users of cannabis. So that's a problematic confounder there. The one that really jumped out to me, though, was when it said they were only going to be doing this to those who needed blood work in the first place. Now, that, to me, suggests if we're talking about all the people who get in crashes and go to the hospital, but only the ones that need blood work, those would be the ones that were most severely injured, not the ones who were less injured. So I think this confounds the study just a little bit, because those who are most in the worst types of accidents, we may find a greater concentration of drug use. Well, duh, it may have impaired them to cause the worst kind of accident. Let's test the people who get in the little tiny accidents as well, so we have a level playing field when we're talking about that. And furthermore, it's always troubling to me when we're testing people who get into the accidents. It doesn't show us what, you know, how safe cannabis drivers may be who don't get into accidents. It also doesn't tell us whether or not the accident is the fault of the person who's using the cannabis or the person that wrecked into them that was texting on their cell phone or was hung over from the night before or was doing their makeup in the mirror. I do want more data, but I would really like to see more peer review on this to make sure that we've eliminated any of those possible confounding factors in the study.
And two men who owned a Rata dispensary in Tacoma, Washington, are continuing their fight in the court system, despite the fact their drug crime charges have been dropped. Earlier this year, Guy Casey and Michael Schaaf had their drug charges dismissed in a Washington district courthouse. Now they say they want their cannabis back. The two friends were arrested in May of 2010 when their club 420 Cooperative was raided by the West Sound Narcotics Enforcement Team. Detectives seized 85 marijuana plants and 11 pounds of usable marijuana in that raid, according to records. Also, computers, financial documents, and all the usual things that are hauled away in these types of instances. The men were charged with multiple counts of unlawful delivery of a controlled substance and intent to deliver an unlawful manufacture of a controlled substance. But in the end, much of the case was based on the testimony of a confidential informant who claimed to have witnessed all the criminal behavior. Prosecutors said the men sold cannabis to people not authorized to have it, charged exorbitant prices for self-enrichment, and kept a far larger supply on hand than the law allows. Now, in February, the deputy prosecutor dismissed all of the charges, saying that the informant who was the basis for the investigation had problems with the accuracy of their reports. Now the men want the return of their marijuana and other property that were seized during the raids. They have filed a lawsuit seeking the return of 48 ounces of marijuana each, or the cash equivalent, and 30 plants. The attorneys contend that each plant is worth between $3,000 and $3,500. Casey's attorney stated that the case was cleared and that his client is entitled to a return of the property at issue since it is no longer needed as evidence. But the deputy prosecutor in the case is saying that that is just not going to happen, since the former defendants were still in violation of the state's Medical Use of Marijuana Act. He said that since they possessed more than five times the amount allowed by law for a single patient, that they took a step outside of the rules set up by the legislature and would make them lose protections offered by the act, the so-called clean hands rule. The case could have farther reaching consequences for other cases in the matter of seized property during marijuana raids. In this case, as many others, the Sheriff's Department is being accused of treating the men badly, forcing them to suffer emotional and monetary harm as a result of the investigation. Mr. Casey and his family, including his children, were held at gunpoint by the Drug Task Force that day last year. They were humiliated in front of their neighbors, and the case was a huge financial burden. One of the defendants lost his home due to the financial burden of the arrests. Both men's businesses' reputations were injured by the police department's statement about them taking advantage of sick people. Now, the outcome may establish a precedent in Washington State where courts have yet to rule on whether forfeiture laws actually apply to medical marijuana. The two sides are scheduled to argue it out in court on August 9th.
Well, 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 if you think these guys are five times over the limit and violating the law, charge them with something. If not, give them back their property. God, more insanity in this war on drugs. We're back right after this.
It's 20 after the hour, and we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would send you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
All right, guys, here we go. We got the top six answers on the board. Name something that gets passed around. Chris.
A joint.
A joint.
This is Normal Show Live, where a joint is always the right answer.
Now, Chris, I don't know what 100 people you thought we were talking to at some nice little mall across good old America, but I'm pretty sure the people didn't tell the survey people, hey, an illegal drug. Let's turn around and see how many weed heads are out there with Chris. A joint!
NORMAL stands for Responsible Adult Cannabis Use. If cannabis use is causing problems in your life, consider taking a break or seeking medical assistance. Consider ceasing cannabis use if you have a family history of mental illness. Don't drive or operate heavy machinery while impaired by cannabis use. Cannabis use is not without risks, even though the risks may be far less than those posed by legal drugs.
As High Times Senior Cultivation Editor, I'm often called into the field and asked to sample or even identify exotic strains of marijuana in their natural habitat. Now, for the first time, I've compiled more than 120 of my favorite strains into this single field guide designed to fit into your pocket as you travel the world in search of your favorite plant. From Friend's Closet Grow Room to the wilds of Northern California, this single guide covers all of today's best-known strains, plus heirlooms and throwbacks, including High Times quality photos and information on each variety's genetic heritage and growing characteristics, plus my personal notes on aroma, flavor, and potency. So this is Danny Danko, author of the official High Times Field Guide to Marijuana Strains, wishing you good times and great ganja.
The official High Times Field Guide to Marijuana Strains is available at hightimes.com and finer bookstores.
It's time for your daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Today we bring you tunes for Roots Monday, our celebration of the music that evolved into the popular modern music of today. We pick the best of blues, country, folk, and jazz with a 420 feel and serve it up for you every Monday. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now here's some more great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes.
Hey
Hey everybody, this is Cannon Bob with your Roots Monday Toker Tune. Today we've got another music video for you. Today's tune is Hit That Jive Jack, originally recorded by the Nat King Cole Trio in 1941. This particular version was recorded by a band called the Smokey Joe Combo from France. And since they're from France, I know nothing about them because their bio is in French, their website is in French, and their MySpace page is in French. Although they sing in perfectly good English. Sit back and hit that jive, Jack, with the Smokey Joe Combo on your Roots Monday Toker Tune.
Copy of that song for your iPod? Check out the Daily Toker Tunes at the Stash blog by surfing to stash.normal.org and choosing Media and then Toker Tunes from the main menu.
Starfish Designs, makers of the original Gandalf.
I'm Radical Russ, and when I want to relax, I always have my 17-inch long original Gandalf from Starfish Designs nearby. The hand-blown borosilicate glass is strong and easy to clean, and the design is sleek and sophisticated. Starfish designs are available from Bend, Oregon at a glass retailer near you. For locations, call 541-788-GLASS. That's 541-788-4527.
Hey, is it 420 yet? This is Rick Cusick from High Times Magazine, and you're tuned into Normal's Audio Stash.
Hey, this is Willie Nelson, or Norman. And if you're one of the 26 million Americans who smoked marijuana last year, you need to get involved in the drive to legalize marijuana. We need your help to stop the senseless arrests of more than 800,000 Americans each year on marijuana charges. Together, we can end marijuana prohibition and stop the arrests of marijuana smokers. To learn what you can do to help, contact Normal at NORNL.org. Our call toll-free, 888-67-NORMAL.
Michael Phelps, Olympic superstar, 14 gold medals, world record holder. So much for that amotivational syndrome. Legalization, decriminalization, lowest law enforcement priority, medical marijuana, ganja sacrament, consumer cannabis, industrial hemp. The world of marijuana law reform involves many different aspects of cannabis that interact nearly every public policy discussion in America, including healthcare, the economy, global climate change, law enforcement in prisons, immigration, religion, free speech, energy policy, and war. Now, we take a look at how re-legalizing marijuana will change the world in our Normal Show Live Cannabis Conversations.
All right, welcome back, everyone. For those of you who are joining us expecting to hear ESPN producer Sean Pamphilon on today's show, he will be on tomorrow's show. We had to postpone because the NFL Players Association unanimously voted to end the lockout there. I guess the owners end the lockout. They voted for whatever. There's going to be football next year, and that makes me happy as hell. Anything for my Packers to be able to defend their title, I'm all for it. So no problem. We'll get Sean Pamphilon on tomorrow. In the interim here, I'm pulling out a interview from our archives. This is one that I did a while ago with a woman by the name of Catherine Thompson, and it had to do with our marijuana unicorns. This was something that happened where John Walters, the former drug czar, said finding a first-time nonviolent marijuana offender in jail or prison was like finding a unicorn. You find one, you've got a story, because they just don't exist. So we had a contest to find out, are there any marijuana unicorns out there? Have there been people who have done serious time for just mere first-time nonviolent possession of marijuana? This is Catherine Thompson's story on that issue. Well, a couple of weeks ago here on the Daily Audio Stash, we played you some quite amazing audio from the drug czar, John Walters, who claimed that trying to find anyone in jail or prison for a first-time nonviolent marijuana possession-only offense was like finding a unicorn. They just don't exist. Well, we put together a contest past the stash to find the marijuana unicorns, and what do you know? I found a marijuana unicorn in my very own home state, the state of my birth, Idaho, and we're going out to Idaho Falls right now to speak with Catherine. And Catherine, thanks for joining us here today on the Daily Audio Stash.
Thanks for having me.
So had you heard that quote from the drug czar about the unicorns before you heard it on the Daily Audio Stash?
I had not. If I had, I'm sure I would have laughed.
I'll bet you would have. Why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about your situation, what happened with you, and how you can prove the drug czar was wrong.
Okay. In about September of 2003, I was at my boyfriend's house. I was in college at the time, and I was in, like, the back part of the house doing my homework. And the police came because there was the music was too loud or something. There were several people over there, but he came in, and we talked for a long time. He said, just turn the music down, and...
And this is the police that came over, right?
Huh?
This is the police that came over that you're talking to. Okay.
Yes. And none of us even noticed, but there had been a bong in the living room while we were talking, like on a shelf somewhere. And we seriously talked for like half an hour before he noticed. And somebody got a paraphernalia ticket for it, whoever claimed it, and then we all got a frequenting a place where drugs are used ticket, which from what I still don't understand exactly, but from what I gather, it means that you're in a home to distribute, buy, sell, use drugs.
Right.
And I originally pled guilty because I was like, well, I can't really prove my intent, but I wasn't, in fact, there to do drugs. I was there to see my boyfriend. And I went to... They put the court date back several months, and so I finally went in December. And I didn't know... I maybe should have looked or gotten a lawyer or something. I didn't even know it was punishable with jail time because they searched the rest of the house. They didn't find anything but that bong. And so I pled not guilty, you know, and said, well, I wasn't there to do drugs. And I went straight from the courtroom to jail for 20 days, got 2 years probation and a $300 fine.
Ooh. So you pleaded not guilty to frequenting a home where drugs were used. Was that the charge?
Yes.
Okay, so you weren't even found in possession of any marijuana, correct?
No, okay. There wasn't any in the house. It was just paraphernalia.
Okay, so you had no marijuana. Nobody else had any marijuana. The house had no marijuana. There was a bong sitting there. So
yes.
For being in the same room as a bong, you spent 20 days in jail.
Yes, I did.
Oh, wow. That is unbelievable. So, 20 days in the jail. Was this the county jail?
It was.
Okay. Right. And this is out in Idaho Falls out there. So, some of the other, were you there in the jail by yourself? Were you locked up with other people? What was the situation?
I guess because they were supposed to be nicer or something when I first got there, they called them like the mother hens or something, but I was in a pod with a bunch of inmates that were waiting to go to prison, actually. Mm. Like, there was a lady who'd killed somebody, and, I mean, they were not...
So we had somebody who had committed either manslaughter or murder. Any robberies, thieves, anything like that?
You know, she's the only one that really sticks out to me.
Okay. So there you are for 20 days, locked up with someone who's killed someone, and your crime was being in a room where there was a bong.
Yes.
Now, after the 20 days that you spent locked up, you also, did you mention you had some probation to serve?
I did.
How long did that last?
I think I got off, it was for 2 years, but I think I got off at like 13 months, because obviously there was, I mean, I wasn't a user, they drug tested me and I passed and did everything I was supposed to do, went to a drug and alcohol class. And
and this was conditions of your probation? You had to take, you know, mandatory random urine screens?
Yes.
Okay. And this drug and alcohol prevention class, did they in the class mention anything about not going into rooms where a bong was sitting?
No, they didn't.
didn't come up, huh?
No.
Wow. I'm sorry to laugh at this because, I mean, it is horrible. It's just amazing to me that anyone would have to spend time in jail for marijuana possession, but to spend time in jail for just being in a room where there was a bong, that's just amazing to me. And this 20 days that you spent, what time was that? What time of the year?
It was over Christmas and New Year's.
Over Christmas and New Year's. So you got to spend your Christmas locked up alongside hardened criminals, one of whom killed someone because you were in the room with a bong. So you didn't get your Christmas. Did they at least give you a nice Christmas dinner?
You know, I try not to remember the food.
I'll bet. Oh, wow. I just don't know what to say about this. I, you know, when I was putting out this call for marijuana unicorns, I was pretty sure I would get people that would say, you know, I was caught with a joint or I was caught with a baggie or whatever. I didn't think I would get so many people that had gotten a hold of me where the charges didn't even involve marijuana that they had. It was marijuana that someone else had. And then I saw your case where there wasn't even any marijuana involved. That just blows my mind. I do want to cover a couple of things, Catherine, about this story. Now, you mentioned that the police came over because there was loud music going on. And so they came into the house and you were talking to them for about a half hour. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. So let's point this out to everyone so they can learn from the mistake. If the police come over to your house for a noise complaint or whatever the excuse might be, you do not have to let them in your house. In fact, you should not let them in the house, particularly, you know, based on what happened to Catherine here. They want to get into that house so that they can look around and see whatever's in plain view. And if something's in plain view, they're going to act on it, just like they did in Catherine's case. They look around, they see a bong, they're going to act on that. So, folks, if you ever, you know, encounter the police at your home, at your residence, or even if you're at a party somewhere else and the police show up, always remember, go outside of the house, close the door behind you, and talk to the police outside. If they ask to come in, tell them they can't come in without a warrant. If they're asking to come in, they don't have the probable cause to come in. If they're asking you, they need your permission. If they could come in with probable cause, they would have just come in without your permission. So, and I'm not, you know, doing that to criticize you, Catherine, because a lot of people don't know that. And that's why we want to get that across here. So yeah, let's make sure everyone learns from that mistake. And, anything else you want to tell our audience before we go?
You know, I missed my first college finals.
Oh, wow. I missed finals and Christmas and all that.
I actually spent, they let me have my books. They tore all my papers, like, out of the spirals so that I didn't have metal or anything. So I spent a lot of time studying, but I still didn't do very well when I got out because it wasn't conducive to studying, but.
Now, had you mentioned also in this case that you didn't have the assistance of any attorneys?
No, I didn't. And I would absolutely, especially, I mean, my original, the pre-trial, when I pled guilty, I was like, I am guilty, I guess. And that was a different judge than I actually had. And she said, well, you know, if you weren't there to use marijuana and you didn't know it was in the house and all that, then you're not guilty. And I was like, well, you know, if it took a police officer half an hour to notice that there was a bong in the house, then how am I supposed to know?
Exactly. Right. So, when you look at everything that you had to do, you know, going to jail for the 20 days, the 13 months of probation and urine tests and all of that, does it look now like, you know, getting the lawyer would have been worth it as far as the expense goes?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Because I mean, I didn't even know. You have to pay to be in jail.
Yes.
For your food and stuff. And I was really surprised at that. I was like, really? I have to pay you for being in here?
And, yeah.
You know, I mean, I was a college student and I worked, but not very much. And the expense of it was enormous. But I think the biggest thing was, you know, when I first got in there, I really, into jail, I was really confused. I was like, okay, what have I done? Because I felt like a criminal. I mean, I'm in jail, and I really, it took me a long time to, like, get over it and realize that I'm not a bad person, that I'm okay, you know, that there are people in here that do deserve to be here, and I'm not one of them. But that was really, really hard, because when you're treated that way, I mean, it feels like you must have done something to deserve that.
No, you absolutely didn't, Catherine, and that's why we're here, you know, fighting for the end of these stupid, you know, anti-marijuana laws that turn good people like you into criminals, at least in the eyes of the law. And there's something to be said about that, about, you know, reacting to how you're treated. I think there might be some people in our community who, you know, feel like criminals. They feel like bad people because that's what they're constantly told. And they're not. They're good people. They're no worse than anyone who likes to drink a beer now and then. I mean, we're just good, hardworking citizens. How's everything going for you now, Catherine? Are you having any troubles in school? Did this conviction affect your student aid or getting jobs or housing or anything like that?
Well, I'm about to find that out. I just applied to the nursing program at Idaho State University, and we'll see if they, because really any drug charges at all, misdemeanor or felony, they do really care about.
Yeah.
But I'm hoping, especially because after this, you know, I researched, and in most, I think there's one other place, and I can't remember where, but this isn't even recognized as a charge.
Right, right.
Well, so, I really, really pray that it doesn't affect my ability to become a nurse. And if it does, I'll call you back.
Yeah, please do. And, you know, federally speaking, I know that the federal government will withhold student loans and grants from anyone who has a prior drug conviction. I don't know if this is going to count in that regard with your case, but even if that's not the case, when you're trying to get into a new school or you're trying to get a new job and there's that line that says, have you ever been convicted of a drug conviction, and you have to check yes, that certainly is going to impact your chances of going places in this world. And it's a shame.
Yeah, and it's really, for a while I stopped hanging out with the same people and all of that, because it was just like, I didn't want to go to jail again. But even now, I absolutely associate with people who smoke marijuana because they're not criminals.
Well, you know, we've got 25 million people in the United States, according to the government's own surveys, 25 million people who use marijuana at least once a year. So if the goal here is to not ever hang out with someone who occasionally uses marijuana, there's not going to be a whole lot of people to meet.
No.
You sound like a good, honest, you know, normal, rational person. I can't imagine that you don't have any prior criminal record or anything either, right?
No, that was my very first offense. So.
Very first offense. Not even in possession. Man, that is just incredible. Well, Catherine, you're definitely a marijuana unicorn. I'm going to get this sent out to John Walters and see what his opinion is of your particular sentence there. I'm just stunned to hear this. Thank you so much for telling your story to everyone here on the Stash.
Thank you.
Eyes a kite, everybody.
This drug in front of me is what they call marijuana.
If we had a dime for every dime bag bought in America, marijuana would be legal by now. Donate to Normal at NORML.org and support Normal Show Live. Going to light. Roll a big fatty.
Marijuana and alcohol are the two most popular recreational drugs in America. Marijuana smoking is non-toxic, relatively safe, and has a low risk of dependence. Alcohol drinking is potentially fatal, dangerous to society, and is quite addictive. Marijuana is safer, so why are we driving people to drink? That's the question of the new book, Marijuana is Safer, So Why Are We Driving People to Drink? By Paul Armentano, Mason Tvert, and Steve Fox. Visit Amazon.com or ChelseaGreen.com today to order your copy of Marijuana is Safer, or visit MarijuanaIsSafer.com.
I'm a doctor.
I'm a lawyer.
I'm a journalist.
I'm a student.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a representative.
I have cancer.
The outdated laws of prohibition are more dangerous than the plant itself.
I lost my scholarship.
I was fired.
20 million arrests since 1965. This is getting ridiculous.
Our prisons are overcrowded with nonviolent offenders.
We have the opportunity to change.
This is costing our country billions of dollars.
Making my family and I fight in a courtroom is difficult enough when I'm already fighting through chemotherapy.
There's no reason to be scared by tradition anymore.
We can stop this.
We can stop this.
We are the American people.
We can stop this.
And you have our support.
We are old.
Young.
Straight.
Gay.
We're every race and nationality.
And we're not going to give up.
You can tax it.
You can regulate it.
Apply age restrictions.
You can create millions of new jobs.
We can save our economy.
President Obama?
It's time for legalization.
Legalization?
Yes.
We
can.
This has been a public service
announcement. You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers.
I want the truth.
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Hoo-ah!
Radical rant.
All right, I've written about idiot Miguel Lopez acting like an ass and embarrassing marijuana legalization efforts in Colorado before, but this time he may have committed a crime. Now, you may have remembered a previous rant of mine called It Only Takes One Idiot, or How to Kill Marijuana Reform. In it, I tell tales of activists who engage in tactics that, from a public relations perspective, endanger the very legalization of marijuana they claim to be fighting for. In that rant, I described Miguel Lopez as an idiot because he got into the face of a legislator screaming about secret police, leading that legislator to tear up a patient-friendly medical marijuana amendment. Then, a group called Colorado 420 Coalition, which included Laura Crejo's Cannabis Therapy Institute, actually circulated the video via YouTube as an example of how the legislator was out of line. Now, in another rant, I followed that up with, called Stoners Against Legalization 2, Colorado Boogaloo, I told you how Lopez, Crejo, and two other geniuses, Robert Chase and Kathleen Trippi, announced their opposition to what they call the MPP-DPA Safer, Sensible Safer initiative, which is officially known as the Regulate Marijuana Like Alcohol petition that Brian Vincente and Mason Tvert have been co-petitioning on here, and it's currently gathering signatures for the ballot. Now, when I told you about that rant, you got to read some, you got to hear some remarks from Kathleen Chippy, one of these people, who argued to oppose that legalization. To oppose legalization, this safer initiative, this Regulate Marijuana initiative. And she said, quote, "This will be Prop 19 all over again, and we will help kill it with smiles on our faces." And for extra nuttiness, you also got Robert Chase accusing Normal's Paul Armentano of being a fascist, and someone named Corey Donahue opining that if only 6 plants and 1 ounce are legalized, then it's not legalization. Okay. Well, these same folks are at it again. Miguel Lopez, in particular, has gone too far. This isn't just the shenanigans of an ignorant zealot. This is a theft against democracy itself. As reported today in the Colorado Independent, marijuana legalization advocate Mason Tvert today filed a formal complaint with the Secretary of State's office alleging that opponents of his group have stolen signed petitions from people circulating them on behalf of Tvert's Regulate Marijuana Like Alcohol organization. The complaint says that on July 17th, Miguel Lopez took a petition out of the hands of someone trying to sign it at Denver's Skyline Park, threw it in the trash, and then stood in front of the trash to prevent anyone from retrieving it. The complaint alleges that a few minutes later, Corey Donahue removed the petition from the trash and gave it to Robert Lopez, who then left the scene with the petition, which Tvert said had around a dozen signatures on it. Miguel Lopez and Donahue are known to oppose Tvert's effort and to support a broader approach to legalization. The Colorado Independent earlier reported that they supported Legalize 2012, but the director of that effort said they are not affiliated with Legalize 2012. Laura Crejo, the director, said, quote, "They have no capacity whatever with Legalize 2012, end quote. Yeah, right. Miguel Lopez isn't officially part of Legalize 2012, though Lopez has been allied with Cannabis Therapy Institute, which is Laura Crejo's group, and Cannabis Therapy Institute is a part of Legalize 2012's Citizen Advisory Board, and at the legislature and in anti-regulate marijuana like alcohol activism, they've been working hand in hand on the same side of the issue, issuing just about the same opinions. But no, he's not officially part of Legalize 2012. Oh, and speaking of that, neither is Corey Donahue. You might get the name Donahue there, the guy who removed the petition from the trash. Though Cannabis Therapy Institute has worked with him in the past and praised him for his activism. Now, it was really hard for me to verify who's tied with whom officially in all these organizations, because most of Legalize 2012's Citizen Advisory Board organizations don't list their board members' names on their websites. So we really don't know who's supporting what out there. We go back to the Colorado Independent in their report here. They say, quote, When reached by phone, Miguel Lopez said it was Tvert's organization that was interrupting an event his group was sponsoring, and that the petitioner had been asked to leave. Oh, okay, so you were sponsoring an event, and somebody was there with a petition to legalize marijuana, and you kicked him out. God, why does that sound so familiar to me? Anyway, quote, "Their petition was creating a distraction." This is Lopez saying this. "Their petition was creating a distraction while we were holding a rally and giving an educational talk. The individual we took the petition from was not trying to sign it. He was trying to destroy it. They were warned not to be there," end quote, said Lopez. Okay, so wait a minute. you admit you took the petition from the guy, but you say he was trying to destroy it. So to stop him from trying to destroy it, you threw it in the trash. Uh-huh, right. Makes a lot of sense. Now, Tvert said that Lopez's account is a fantasy. Quote, that is entirely false based on the accounts of all the witnesses, but I wouldn't expect them to acknowledge what they did. End quote. All right. Now, while Miguel Lopez was allegedly actively thwarting the democratic process, his brother in idiocy, Corey Donahue, was getting himself arrested trying to thwart the organization of the democratic process itself. This is from the Boulder Daily Camera. A Boulder activist was arrested this week after refusing to leave a meeting at the public library that was organized by advocates of a statewide marijuana legalization initiative. Michael Corey Donahue, age 28, was booked into the Boulder County Jail on suspicion of trespassing and using fighting words with a police officer. That's an interesting charge, using fighting words with a police officer. Anyway, the incident began at about 7 p.m. Tuesday after members of a coalition, including the Colorado chapter of Normal and Safer Alternative for Enjoyable Recreation, convened an instructional meeting for volunteers who are circulating petitions. Donahue is an active proponent of marijuana legalization, but said he opposes the efforts led by the coalition because the measure it is pushing would be only a limited legalization of the drug. He is instead hoping for complete legalization of marijuana for adults 18 or older. So basically, Corey Donahue, who doesn't like the so-called MPP, DPA, Safer, Sensible initiative, whatever, doesn't like that initiative, so the people who were trying to organize to get those petitions out, he goes to their meeting and is disruptive, right? If you don't agree with the petition, that's fine. Go start your own petition, but you don't try to mess with the people who are working on the competing petition. And as far as this, not the legalization would be limited, so therefore it's not real legalization. My God, I've heard that before, and this is the problem. Lopez, Donahue, Creho, Chase, Trippy, that's just Colorado. I could name you a whole bunch in California and Oregon and Washington as well. And people like this are what I call the treat it like tomatoes crowd, or tilt. Treat it like tomatoes crowd. Complete legalization in their mind means once you turn 18, you can grow all you like, you can sell all you like, you can possess all you like, all with no taxes, no licenses, no regulations. Now, never mind that selling your own tomatoes is a project laden with taxes, licenses, and regulations, and Colorado already has plenty of laws to comply with regarding tomato sales. But these tilters, they're just true believer zealots who cannot be reasoned with. They really think they can put a measure on the ballot where marijuana is equated with tomatoes and a majority of the public will vote for it. What they are blind to is the fact that tomatoes don't get you high. Nobody is worried that you'll pig out on tomatoes and get behind the wheel of a car. No parent is concerned that their kid will jump the fence and steal your tomatoes for a chips and salsa party. And speaking of kids, if it is like tomatoes, why an 18-year-old limit? Why an age limit? I mean, the fact that you support an 18-year-old limit on this acknowledges that you know it's not like tomatoes. We don't limit tomatoes to children, do we? Now, there may be legitimate causes for opposing regulate marijuana like alcohol, and there's no controversy in running a competing legalized 2012 initiative. Colorado there would be joining Oregon, Washington, and California in that respect. It used to be we had no legalization efforts. Now, each of these states has two or more ballot initiatives competing to legalize marijuana. Competition in the marketplace of ideas is a good thing, and the more shots we have at the ballot box, the better. However, tactics that are designed to obstruct and thwart the other ideas cannot be tolerated. It'll be difficult enough for voters to remember which initiative they've signed during the petition process. Reformers should be encouraging voters to sign all the marijuana legalization petitions, not only to place them all on the ballot and let the voters decide which plan is best, but also to ensure the confused voter hearing, well, don't sign that one, doesn't mistakenly pass up on your petition. Besides, the opponents of legalization will be working in lockstep. We cannot afford to have our own community aiding them in thwarting any effort to legalize. All right, and that's all I got to say about that. That's your Radical Rant for today. And remember, tomorrow we're going to have Sean Pamphilon from ESPN Radio, or actually ESPN itself, the network. He's going to be here joining us. You may remember him as the producer of the Run Ricky Run documentary about Ricky Williams, the Miami Dolphins running back, who was a medical marijuana user and had all sorts of problems with the NFL because of his medical marijuana use. We'll talk to Sean about that and about steroids in sports, about marijuana in sports, and his new projects coming up soon. And maybe some news on this end of the NFL lockout. I'm so happy about that. Glad my Packers get to repeat. Hey, folks, that's all the time we've got for today. So for Cannabis Carry, I'm Radical Russ. We'll see you tomorrow. Ganja John and Kaliko the intern are still in on tour with Slightly Stupid. We won't see them until Wednesday. So until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Take it on one more time. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.